Iambic Audiobooks and PS Publishing Limited present The Painting and the City by Robert Freeman Wexler. Read by Robert Kuyper. The text is preceded by two quotes and a dedication. "We've got the normals squinching." Randy Biscuit Turner, Big Boys, The Wreck Collection. New York is a city, and it is also a creature, a mentality, a disease, a threat, an electromagnet, a cheap stage set, an accident corridor. It is an implausible character, a monstrous vortex of contradictions, an attraction-repulsion mechanism so extreme no one could have made it up. Luke Sante, Lowlife, Lures and Snares of Old New York. The Painting and the City, for Rebecca and Merida. Chapter 1. The City. Tonight, for all its magnificence, the city projected a claustrophobic attitude, in which barren and cheerless buildings huddled for companionship, creaking across streets and alleys to confer with their neighbors. The sky had the brittle look of overripe fruit, all lumpy apples and oozing bananas, while the air felt more July than May, sodden and heavy, attacked by the aroma of uncollected refuse that overflowed its containers like some rain-swollen tropical river. And the faces of the homeless shone with brown light. In summer, rancid haze clings to the buildings, a coating of torpor that drives out all who are able to leave for a weekend, for a month, 2 months, all who own the means of leisure, while the rest take what ease they can, shunning the subways, avoiding the lifeless underground air weighted with the bones of past generations whose inability to speak shackles the city, at its worst in the dead time of heavy summer. Breezes of shaved concrete crumble through the open windows of anyone unfortunate enough to lack air conditioning, and nightfall carries no release, as the trap laid by the day clamps down, vengeful and loathsome. But Jacob Lerner always remained in town and worked, his sculptures gaining life from summer's breath. Returning to the city from his Friday sculpture seminar at Rutgers, he had slept. Miles of train sleep, and dreamed a dream of which he could remember only disconnected scraps, forests of monolithic ferns with grasping, rubbery leaves. The dream had resumed on the F train, more confining. The ferns grew higher, closely packed, trapping him. He woke when the train stopped and left the car without thinking. He emerged at 2nd Avenue and Houston, one stop from his intended destination of Delancey. Outside again, the thick air of the city enveloped him. Dusty hands of brick applauded his passing, hissed their approval. Arches opened to allow unimpeded passage. Fountains emerged to quench his thirst and send sparkling drops into the air, drops that darted among the moon rays, careening and laughing. He hitched a ride on a droplet of iridescent green, sending it off into the depths of darkness, using its stored moon rays to light his path, a trail that wound in geometric randomness past alcoves and minarets, along streets of glass and towers constructed from grains of sand, until, satisfied, they dropped him at the door of his friend Gary Freed's apartment and the party it contained. Lerner worked alone, hours in the studio bending and pounding metal or shaping clay. The solitude eventually filled him with a craving for contact, but the suffocating press of people in a small space after his time alone was a difficult transition. Tonight he felt sociable. Though his sculpture seminar had tired him, it had left him craving more human interaction. He pressed Freed's buzzer a few minutes before 10 p.m., he would be at the party for at least an hour before seeing the painting. Though not a memorable party, everything that happened prior to that moment crystallized as if his first sight of the painting merged both immediate past and far future into one ineradicable memory.
"Hey, Jacob, have a mojito," Freed said at the door. "It's Cuban. Hemingway drank them."
Lerner thanked him and took the drink. Freed looked the way he always did, sleek, healthy seal, nicely groomed and dressed in something stylish and appropriate, suitable and proper appearance for a successful plastic surgeon. Seeing him, Lerner remembered that he had planned to go home and change before the party, but hadn't even gotten on the right subway to do so. The train dream had thrown everything off. A man and a familiar-looking woman stood nearby. The man was talking with his mouth close to the woman's ear, his gaze moving from her face to her breasts, not large but well exposed by the cut of her top. Lerner caught a few words about sweet locations and options to buy.
"Seminar day go okay?" Freed asked.
They chatted for a minute, then Freed moved off to join a woman standing in front of a series of black-and-white photographs showing the steel frames of skyscrapers under construction. Freed, an art collector, also owned an early piece of Lerner's. A small bronze with the appearance of a distorted cage burst open at the top from the inside, as though whatever it once housed had tired of captivity. Lerner had done cages years ago, moved to other themes, and returned.
"Did I hear you say something about making clay things?"
Lerner turned toward the familiar-looking woman and recognized her. Foul-mouthed Juliet, an actress he had seen in a modernization of Romeo and Juliet, now with black hair which had previously been red. He had met her several times, but she never remembered him. Once he had told her he worked as a Zeppelin pilot in Tanzania, bringing supplies to remote regions, and was in New York recovering from surgery after a near-fatal attack by airship pirates. Showing unexpected interest, she asked Lerner about his seminar, but the man interrupted.
"Did I just hear you say you only have to work one day a week? I had no idea teaching was so lucrative. You artists haven't made government grants, teaching gigs. If you work 2 days a week, you could buy a vacation home in East Hampton. I'm in the wrong fucking business."
Lerner stared at the man's face for a moment, then responded,
"That isn't what I said. I teach 1 day a week. I work more than that, a lot more. I'm working right now, talking to you. There's a shadow on the wall behind you. I don't know from what. That's not important. The shape is the important thing. What form would that shadow take in 3 dimensions?
Without waiting for a reaction, Lerner walked off. While crossing the room, he intercepted a man carrying a tray of drinks and exchanged his empty for a new one. 2 women stood near his old sculpture. One of them had set her empty glass in the middle of the cage. The base of the cage was a thin layer of concrete. Lerner had cut down an assortment of plastic tubs, using them as molds for ready-mixed concrete, in which, after drying, he would drill holes for the bronze rods. For his current work, he used a bronze disc as the base, welding the rods to it. Groupings of random syllables rose from the women, growing ordered and distinct as Lerner drew closer. Their voices intertwined, sometimes repeating the same phrase, as though each was talking to herself.
"Up a quarter point. Not advisable. Too much for too little. We told him, but he wouldn't listen. We told him. After the market closes. Always after the close."
One of them said something else, and both laughed. Identical laughs. A crackling that sounded forced and studied, as if, lacking a natural means of expressing mirth, they had taught themselves to approximate. The duo had the coppery hair, dark suit-dress look of financial advisors. They hovered, leathery-winged, between Lerner and his art. Their 2 white skins stretched along unsmiling faces that expressed no welcome.
"Excuse me," Lerner said. "I was just coming to see the art."
He indicated the sculpture, and the women glanced at it.
"Is that what this is?" one of them said. "Of course, don't you remember that seminar we went to? What was it? Art investment through market fluctuations." "Right, right. I see, there's the name, Jacob Lerner. Is he blue chip? I wonder if he's blue chip."
They spoke in identical flat voices that vacuumed oxygen from the room.
"I hope this is appreciating at a commendable rate," the first speaker said. She directed her attention to Lerner. Are you thinking of investing in art? Though her glance at his frayed khakis said she had doubts.
I made my investment years ago, he said.
Oh, look, the other one said. He must be an artist. Gary always has a few around.
You're so correct. Look at the hole there just above the knee, she pointed.
No one else would come to a party dressed so
indiscriminately.
They laughed their dry tinderstick laugh and left Lerner alone with his sculpture.
Emblems of migratory impulses collide amidst the ruins of unimagined civilizations. Paths overgrown by decay, blanched by summer heat, yet never obliterated. Remnants. If found, they bring quite a price at auction. But what of art? Art binds, art guides. The leaders of nations understand this. Even Hitler was a painter. Perhaps the source of the problem lies there. For if an art lover could also be a monster, then far safer for the world if its leaders reject such things. Business is the Lord. Art is what remains after vultures pick the carcass of society. Lerner turned away from the graceless curves of his immature metal. Across the room, Fried pointed out a painting to several guests, including the financial women. Obviously a recent acquisition. Whose would it be, this new banner of wealth and taste? Wishing to avoid the group viewing Fried's new painting, Lerner entered the kitchen, a modern magazine feature of steel and stained concrete. Fried's caterers had been using the oven and restaurant-quality stove. The temperature change hit him a few feet in, but he found the heat pleasant after the chill of the other rooms. And even more pleasing, he saw his friend, Buddy Drake.
I know, but I'm a sucker for twang and pedal steel, Buddy said to his companion, a young black woman.
Truck stop sentimentality, the woman said.
Buddy likes anything that sounds like Mississippi, Lerner said when he reached them. Buddy was a photographer. They had met in art school and over the years had shared a series of decrepit apartments in the East Village and Lower East Side.
Hey, Jacob, have you met Liz Crandall? We just finished shooting some publicity photos for her new novel.
That's why I'm wearing makeup, though turns out women are supposed to wear it all the time.
I was just telling Liz that this band, Blind Revenant, wants me to go with them take pictures. Their first European tour. And why not? Gives me a good excuse to get out of the city this summer.
They talked about their work. Lerner described his recent twisted metal cages. Liz Crandell's second novel was due out in the fall, but she said she wasn't expecting much of a response from critics.
My problem is, she said, I'm a hopeful surrealist in an age of neoconceptualism and irony. I'm sorry. I've been practicing lines for interviews.
Fried tapped Lerner on the shoulder.
Hey, I want to show you guys the new painting. Come on.
They followed Fried to the hall where Lerner had seen him with the investment women. Lerner couldn't have known, as he took those first steps toward the painting, that time would stop, would become an inconsequential monolith dedicated to its own absence. Depths of forgotten dreams, years traced in lines on faces, the maze of lines, maze of minds, maze of bodies on the street, walking without listening, without seeing, all oblivious to the suffering beneath the surface. Closer to the painting, coils of frosty air tugged at Lerner, a warning, perhaps, an attempt to save him. He stood at the wide end of a long, dark funnel. Nothing existed outside the tube, and its tapering walls directed him to a scene so delicate that at first all he could see was the glow of a painterly candle. His breath stopped. Water covered him, clear water that didn't distort the canvas. In the foreground, a woman sat facing the viewer. A candelabrum on the low table before her illuminated the darkened room. Lerner floated alone, no one in the world but himself and the painting. The eyes of the woman met his. He smiled, for her face bore the beauty of Diana, of Athena. But what was that in the doorway? Walking. Walking, but mud ensnared his feet. He looked down. The mud, a brilliant blue,
blocked his way, it mounted in front of him a thick wedge dotted with stiff peaks. Mounds of other colors and hues lay nearby. A hum filled the air, and Lerner glanced up to see a shape descending, a vast wedge of stiff fibers. The fibers enveloped him, scooped him up with a blue mud. He rose and rose to an impossible height. Then it dashed him against a fabric wall. From there, he looked out at Freed's apartment, looked out from the painting. His body flattened into the web of canvas.
Freed's voice broke through the buffering, muddy layers that surrounded Lerner.
Philip Schurler, Dutch-English. I'm told it's quite rare, that he usually painted outdoor scenes, markets and such.
From his perch within the painting, Lerner sensed unrest. In a doorway behind the woman, a man stood, so indistinct he might have been a shadow, save for the candle he held, his hand shielding the light so that it exposed no more than his face. His expression displayed such malevolence that Lerner had to force himself to look elsewhere at the velvet red drapes, oriental rug. The woman. Her serenity implied she carried no sense of the presence behind her.
Voices mingled, clinical discussions of imagery or technique, but what of the woman, the sweet, unsuspecting woman?
Jacob, Jacob, are you okay?
He found that he had slumped against Buddy Drake. His collapse, or whatever it was, had turned him from the painting, and outside its influence, calm resumed.
Tired, he said. Long day. Got up early to teach my class. Guess I should be getting home.
End of chapter 1.